You know, we really want people to be in charge of their own learning, to have a sense of agency around it instead of it being done to them. Oh, here you go. You got to go to another workshop and another training. Those are different if you're like, I want to go to that because I feel like this is an important part of my learning journey to get me from point A to point B.
Hi, I'm Christine Shaw, CEO and President of Naylor Association Solutions, and I'm your host of the Association Advisor Podcast. We'll learn from successful association executives, partners, and clients on how to create a thriving, prosperous, and value-driven association. I invite you to join me in keeping informed and, most importantly, keeping your association profitable. Our goal is to leave you feeling inspired, more confident, and more knowledgeable. This is the Association Advisor Podcast. Hi, and welcome to the Association Advisor Podcast, brought to you by Naylor Association Solutions. I'm your host, Christine Shaw. Associations must become real-time support systems rather than annual conference providers. Those aren't my words. They belong to our guest, Ron Nozoy, the CEO of the National Association of Secondary School Principals. So how exactly can an association create those support systems? In today's episode, Ron will tell us how it's done. Ron's career began as a school teacher and principal. From there, Ron worked his way to becoming the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Policy and Programs at the U.S. Department of Education. We'll talk to Ron about the online spaces that NASSP uses to unite its members. We'll also discuss the future of advocacy and learn the tools that any association can use to strengthen its members' voices. Ron's energy and passion is infectious, and you'll soon hear exactly what I mean. So let's dive right in. Welcome to the Association Advisor Podcast, Ron. I'm so happy to have you as my guest here today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you know, you do a lot of fantastic work at NASSP, but we'd really like to start by getting our listeners to understand more about you and your passion for education. So tell us a little bit about that and what motivates you.
I didn't have a plan to become an educator out of college. My parents are both public school educators, so I saw how hard they worked, and my mom was an elementary teacher, so grading papers all night, all weekend, dragging me to her classroom to help her set them up over the summer, all of that. My dad was a secondary administrator, and I saw him, you know, go from coaching all the way through that, and I was like, I'm not doing that. And then when I was in college, a couple of classmates had trouble with their writing, ended up asking me for help, and I helped them, and I was like, wow, I can't believe that, like, I helped you, you know, and anyway, got the bug, ended up changing careers. I was going to go into law.
Wow.
Yeah, and changed my careers and changed my career path and decided to go into teaching and then never looked back ever since. So,
you know, that's a testament to your parents because on the one hand, I have to say it's in your blood, but it's sort of like you're like, no, I'm not going to do it. But I think it was destined to be, you know?
Well, and they didn't want me to be a teacher either because they were like, we don't want you to work this hard for that little pay, you know, but when you love helping people figure out, for me, it's that when people get it, you know, that moment when the light goes on and they're, oh, I get it. That to me is, I can't get enough of that. So,
yeah. Well, as somebody whose roots and family are born in education, let's talk about the fact that really today, especially school leaders are feeling increasingly isolated. So tell us a little bit about how you help your members feel connected and how do you see that evolving in the future?
Yeah, thanks for bringing the isolation up because it is, you know, they say it's lonely at the top and it's super lonely if you choose to make it in school leadership. But of course, there are ways to make it not lonely and we do it through a series of things. One, we have a series of online networks that people can join and they can connect up role alike, you know, a new assistant principal, a new principal, LGBTQ plus principals or principals from rural areas. So they can connect up that way. That's one. Number two, we really focus on elevating the member stories because once one educator, once one school leader sees another school leader telling their story, school leaders don't brag. They're never talking about themselves. It's always about their amazing kids or their amazing teams. But when they're in a room with each other and they can start to talk about the practice, they can bring up their problems of practice in ways that most of the general public won't understand. And then that becomes a very safe space for them. So helping them understand that it is okay to, one, be vulnerable and tell your story instead of like the show and tell approach where you're talking about all the great things that are happening at your school, you can also talk about some things that you're working on and struggling with, and your peers can be a huge help. So we've opened up these networks and they've taken off. We do this kind of peer-to-peer, intentionally programming peer-to-peer learning in all of our engagements, our in-person engagements. It's taken a while, honestly. It's taken a while for members to understand that they can speak openly about their practice in a safe space, of course.
Yep.
And they're starting to do it more and starting to realize that they actually are the experts in education that we know they are and we believe they are and we tell everybody they are. And so it's coming along.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I think, you know, whatever profession you're in, most of us are in a hybrid environment and isolation can happen really in any industry. So I like, though, that you were saying about a combination of online communities as well as that storytelling, sharing within practitioners and specific to what they're doing. It helps a lot because then you realize you're not in it alone. But you talked about your peer-to-peer network. So let's double click on that. Tell us a little bit more about how NASSP has created those for their members and the development of those. It'd be great to dive into that.
So we started them actually in the heat of the pandemic because people were really struggling for like connection and understand, you know, it's hard to know how to navigate a space you've never navigated before, right? So we created those spaces then and they were just simply online. They're all run by members. We don't, the association itself, the staff, we don't delve in any of the content. We don't focus any of the conversations. They're really, well, we ask for a couple of facilitators who sign up through our membership, and then they've run the entire series of network meetings for a year. And they do them differently. Some crowdsource ideas that the folks want to talk about. Some have an open forum. Some have a specific theme that they're going to drill in and on, like advocacy, for example. We strongly believe in of, by, and for principles, right? So we want them to be shaping their own learning journeys. And we provide any resources they might ask for. Does anybody have any resources around this? We might chip in a couple things, but really they share their own resources with each other. And then the success for us around those is when we have our annual meeting or any of our other in-person events, when those online members want to get together with their members face-to-face and be like, I know you, we were talking, you know, like that's really cool for us because we then make a truly live into this national association where we're connecting members across, you know, state lines, across geographies, across different belief systems. I mean, all of that, across political lines, all of it.
Yeah. And, you know, what I like about that is even as adults, it can be intimidating when you're in a network online and you go in person and then you're like the new kid at school trying to meet people. But when you automatically can go, oh my gosh, I know you and I can connect and you're in my peer group. I mean, it makes a huge difference for that in-person experience at an annual meeting as well.
Crowdsourcing across the membership is growing.
I love that.
We instituted an online community, a forum where folks can, hey, I'm looking for a school with a similar demographic to mine. You know, I'm making like, that is working on this particular project. Has anyone done it? Does anybody have any advice? Yeah. And then we can crowdsource through this community where, you know, the answer is somewhere in our membership.
Yeah.
Someone's done it really well and someone has learned some hard lessons around that, both of which are valuable to someone who's trying to figure out how to do this.
Yeah. And, you know, Ron, what you just articulated is the whole point of association.
Yeah, absolutely.
Community, right? That's the value right there.
Yeah,
you can't get that outside of a membership group. So I love that. Let's talk about something else you have discussed, which is hyper-personalized professional learning is the future.
Sure.
First,
sure.
Tell me, what exactly does that mean?
It's really the opposite of a one-size-fits-all model. Mm-hmm. In education, we have been subjected to, and frankly, kind of acquiesced to this sort of one-size-fits-all, you know, train the trainer, you know, it's one model and then everybody has to learn it and we pass it on to each other. And, you know, those are important ways to learn new information. It's exactly what we expect every teacher to do and every principal to do in every classroom in school is differentiate and personalize. So, for example, if you and I were going through it, you're a veteran principal who's been knocking it out the park, but we're struggling with a new thing that none of us, AI comes out, right? You're veteran, I'm a rookie. What you need and what I need are two different things, right? You already have the t-shirts and the scars and the, you know, all that stuff, right? I'm rookie. I don't even know any of it. So why would we make us go through the same training? You can read the online summary real quick and you're up to speed. I might need to sit down with someone and talk through it. So this personalized learning journey allows people to really select their own journey with some guidelines, you know, help people understand that, you know, it's just not a free-for-all. You have to be learning and growing towards an outcome. but really puts the leaders back in the driver's seat of their own learning, which then we see when people want to do it and want to learn it for themselves, they're more apt to be successful at it than when it's done to you.
Yeah. And you know, what I'd like to have you tell our listenership is, what steps would you recommend, or how can another association leader, if they're listening, say, how do I do that for my membership? Any recommendations you can give?
Rule number one, always tune in with the leadership, right? I mean, with the membership, get in close with the membership. So find yourself an advisory body or a group of folks from your membership that you really trust, even if you've been a lifelong member yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, don't just go on your own gut. Like, if you ask the good questions and you listen and you actually do what they say, the members will tell you everything you need to know about where you need to go and what they really need. We grapple with, I should say, what people need and what people want. Sometimes those are different.
Absolutely.
And it's really hard to get somebody what they need if they want something else.
Yeah.
And so sometimes if you start with what they want, it ends up working to what they need if you just have the right facilitation. And so, you know, we really want people to be in charge of their own learning, to have a sense of agency around it instead of it being done to them. Oh, here you go. You got to go to another workshop and another training. Those are different if you're like, I want to go to that because I feel like this is an important part of my learning journey to get me from point A to point B.
Yeah. No, that's great. And I think, as you said, those are good pieces of advice that other leaders could work on and take to heart and implement. So I love that. Let's talk about another major component of being an association and the purpose, which is advocacy. Mm. So tell me a little bit of how you've seen that change over the past few years.
Well, for us at our association, it used to be more of a traditional advocacy effort. You know, we work on with a committee of folks, we'd work on a series of talking points, and here's our, you know, federal agenda. We still do that. We still work on that part. And then that was kind of it. We would go to the Hill, you know, take our, depending on the year, 250 to 400 school leaders to the Hill to go advocate with their federal electeds. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of like everybody goes with the same talking points and they're, you know, hey, we need these funding streams because of these things. They're important. Please fund them, right? We put ourselves in the shoes of our elected officials. Is that what they, you know, I don't think that's why they're on the Hill. They didn't sign up to just hear person after person after person read off of a sheet of talking points. And so we're like, look, the stories are really important. Your personal stories are really important because in education, people really don't know the inside and out of school because everybody went to school. So we all kind of think we're experts in school because we went there like whatever, decades ago. But when principals start talking about the impact of policy or funding decisions and what those things really meant positively and or negatively with their elected officials, principals tell real stories. They don't make them up. These are things that happened in their lives and they're really powerful and really memorable. And so we found great success with our advocacy efforts around really telling their story. Of course, folding in like how that story is related to whatever it is that we were advocating for, mm-hmm. but really coming at it from a human point of view takes away some of the awkwardness or the best way I can put it is it levels everybody to the human level. It's not about what your status or station in life is. We're talking like from one human being to the next.
Absolutely.
And the electeds have been great about being responsive to that.
So on that note, we've talked about the importance of principals and teachers sharing stories and policy and how it impacts their work. So how do we amplify member voices so they can continue to influence decisions that affect educators?
For members in general, we have to get them to realize that they are experts in their field.
Yeah.
Like sometimes when we go up on the Hill, and back in the day, I've done this too. Oh my God, we're going to sit with a senator. And they're done. You know, they are incredible and they are amazing, right? They did get to a very high station and status in the American system of government. But sometimes we forget that we're constituents and we're voters and electeds work for us. That's the way the system is set up. And so when people realize, when our members realize that they actually do matter, then they're more apt to share some of the stuff that, like, we say this all the time, you're not, quote unquote, just a principal. You're a principal. Right. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
Right. And we don't ever brag or boast and we're always humble. But when people realize that they are an expert in child and adolescent learning and development, and they're speaking with someone who is not an expert, I think the educator in us comes out and we can explain it in a way that it is humanizing and it's nice and polite. And it's, you know, it's not talking down to anybody. It's a real level conversation. I think we make a lot of progress with that, but it comes from helping the members understand that what we do for a living and we know intimately because we do it every day, that's not known to most of the rest of the civilized world. Yeah. And you have to explain it in a way that we can't just speak in industry jargon and assume that people understand what that change management at a local building is like. You have to explain it. And I think when our members do that, they come from a sense of sincerity and authenticity. It resonates with folks that they talk with.
That's great. That's a good perspective on that. So thank you for sharing. You know, we've talked a lot about future. We've talked a lot about things that have changed or evolved. But what is the one thing you think should never change?
Well, in education, for sure, and in our association space, and I can't speak for other associations, but in the education association space, it is 100% always will be about relationships.
Mm-hmm.
This is about individual people. And then the things that we share in common, you know, there are things I've traveled all around the country to see schools of all kinds, in all jurisdictions, in all kinds of arrangements. And the thing that we all share, every one of us was that teacher on the campus, the go-to teacher that our principal was like, hey, Christine, I need your help. Can you? And then you're like, okay, I'm overwhelmed, but okay, I'll do it. And then you did it and knocked it out the park at a very high level.
Yeah.
Every single principal and assistant principal was that teacher.
Yeah.
And we were all tapped on the shoulder by someone who saw something in us that we didn't know. So like these things that connect us at the human level are like super germane to what we believe they're germane to our education universe. And so I think those are the kinds of things that we can never lose touch of, that relationship and that personal connection.
You know, I believe in that so much. The thing I struggle with, it's not related to associations, but I'm curious your perspective as a as an educator or person in education your entire life, is like this generation coming up. It's funny, Ron. Recently, I saw a picture of a friend's like school-age kids who had just gone to a hockey tournament and won.
Yeah.
And in that picture, they're all sitting around a table. Not one of them is looking up. They're all on a device or a tablet. And I'm like, how do we teach this generation the importance of that human interaction and relationship? It's probably not a problem we'll solve today, but I'm just curious your perspective on that.
You know, every generation is different, right?
Yeah.
Because we're shaped by the generation that came before us.
Yeah.
And this generation, one of the things that is misunderstood, I think, about this, you know, the alphas and the Zs, I think, they do want a sense of connection. They want to be seen and heard, and they want to have a sense of connection. It's just that their terms are different than perhaps ours were.
Yeah. Thank you for reframing that. I like that.
They want to fix the world. They just expect to be given the keys to fix the world today, where we have to be like, no, you got to pay your dues and you got to earn your
spot.
You got to work your way. No. The world is flat to them, so they don't need that permission. They just want to do it, but they want to have a sense of like being noticed, being recognized for their efforts, whereas we tried not to be noticed.
Right. It's funny because one of my previous guests, we talked about this with Tamisha, where she was saying that you got to meet them where they are. You got to be ready. You got to be next generation ready.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing. I think it's our generation who's not ready, but
correct.
I loved how you reframed it. They want it. They just want it on their terms, not our terms. So that was great. Ron, if you're a listener, you know we end every podcast session by asking, what is your book recommendation? This is probably going to be really good.
I'll just tell you from an author's standpoint, rather than a single book, I'll tell you, I like Daniel Pink a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And in education, we have so many books.
Right, exactly. It's probably the wrong question for someone.
Right. And so like trying to read, my reading is not so much about the work that's like internal to the craft, but like larger, how do I see the world in a different way? So
yeah. And you do, like, just this little takeaway, that's something I'm going to carry with me about, you know, shifting my perspective to looking at that generation of, they just have different terms, you know.
Yeah.
So
they care a lot about the future of the world.
Yeah.
Maybe more than we did. Like, if you think about it, maybe more than we did. We were like, you know.
You know, you're right when you say that, because when I think about that, like, I didn't think about larger issues or the planet. I just was like, I want to get to school, get good grades, get a job, stay below the radar, not get
I'm like,
trouble,
Mom, what's
right?
for
they
dinner?
Want to save the world.
Yeah. That was my burning question was, Mom, what's for dinner, right?
Yeah, like, exactly.
They're like, how are we going to solve food insecurity?
Exactly.
What? Like, these kids really, the younger generation really does want to do good. They just need the space to do it in.
Yeah. And it's different than how we were. So,
Well,
this was great. I learned a lot from you. I always do. You're a fantastic guest. And I really want to thank you for making the time to share your knowledge and wisdom with other association leaders.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Association Advisor Podcast, brought to you by Naylor Association Solutions. To join our monthly newsletter, go to associationadvisor.com or just click the link in the show notes of this episode. Don't forget to follow us on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast so you won't miss an episode. See you next time.